It is my pleasure to introduce our 10-minute speaker this evening. Will you please welcome Billy L. from Visalia.
My name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Billy.
Grateful to be in a meeting today. You know, I was a little nervous when Rick called me. I thought, man, all these people in Visalia, and he asked me to come do the warm-up. And, you know, I'm grateful to do it. I'm grateful that I'm able to come up here and do it. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic home like most of us have, and, you know, can you hear me? I grew up in an alcoholic home like a lot of us here did, and, you know, I had a roof over my head. I had food. I never went without, but there was always alcohol and other things going on. And, you know, my dad died when I was 9 of cirrhosis, and just all these things that I seen growing up, and I thought, you know, I was for sure destined to be an alcoholic. I didn't think it was such a bad thing. You know, it wasn't a horrible childhood, and, you know, I got into high school and started drinking and, you know, doing what high school kids do, and I knew I had a problem when everybody would stop and I'd want to keep drinking, you know, and, you know, I didn't have to go through all the misery that a lot of people had to go through. I have family in recovery that has 19 years now, somewhere around there, and I remember when I was a kid, I grew up with them, and I watched the way we lived, and then when they got sober, I'd go over there and I would see the way they lived. And when all the door jams shut and the windows had glass in them, and there wasn't cops at the house all the time, you know, I saw that and I knew exactly where I was headed, you know, and so I decided that I'm just going to stop drinking. I don't need no AA. So I've been around AA for a long time. I was a kid coming to Alana Club dances and I seen it, you know, and I thought it was some cult, everybody smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, and I really didn't think I needed it. So about 3 days of not drinking, I said, you know, I need to do something because it's not working. And, you know, I went to a meeting, and that was December 7th of 2002, and my life's been pretty good since then. You know, I got sober, I got a sponsor right away, I worked the steps. I read that book. You know, my sponsor told me, I was telling a guy right now, he says, if you can't afford to get a book, go steal one and make an amends later. And I thought, you know, it makes sense. You know, it makes sense. You know, I got sober when I was 18 years old. And, you know, I didn't think, well, I'm just going to get sober and be sober for it's a long time. When you're 18, the rest of your life is a long time. And I had no desire. It was difficult at first. You know, being as young as I was, you know, there's not a lot of other 18-year-olds getting sober at the time. And, you know, I was very fortunate. I had a lot of people take me under their wing and help me through this thing. You know, and it helped that I had family here, too, as well. You know, so I got a sponsor. I worked the steps and, you know, I helped other people. You know, I share this at my home group meeting. I haven't met a person yet that's wanted to stay sober and done all the things that are suggested here and get drunk. I haven't met them. And I have the guy don't come back in the rooms after a relapse saying, you know, I was helping all these people. I was working my steps. I was doing all these great things and I got drunk. You know, I just haven't met the guy yet. And so for me, what I've learned is if I keep doing those things, I probably won't have to get drunk. And, you know, for about 4 years into my sobriety, I quit going to meetings so much. You know, I'd go to one a year to get a chip. And, you know, I didn't feel like drinking. I felt like killing some people, but the thought of drinking wasn't even a thought, you know. And, you know, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous so much isn't about quitting drinking. It's about living life like a normal human being should, you know. And, you know, the cash register honesty thing when I first got here, you know, I was so proud of myself to give that lady that money that she gave me extra, because before I got her, I would have took it, you know. I would have kept it, you know. And it's taught me how to be a much better person, you know, in all aspects of my life. Just not being honest, but, you know, because when I got here, I was an 18-year-old who thought I knew everything, which, you know, is normal, you know. And, You know, I have a really good life today. I met my wife in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we've been together 11 years, you know, which most people, relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, they're doomed from the beginning, you know, and we've managed to make it this far, you know, and it helps when we both work on ourselves and not try to work on each other. You know, that's if you're new in a relationship and recovery, that's one thing I suggest is don't work their program. And, you know, my life's really good today. You know, most of my problems are self-induced. You know, I have a little girl who's 8 years old who's going to have a kidney transplant this year, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to give it to her. And you know, I'm thinking maybe there's a reason I got sober when I was 18. You know, I don't know if that's it, but you know, I'm glad I did, because you know, it's a lot of work just to take care of a kid alone, but when you have a sick one, it's a lot of work. And, you know, my wife and I are both in recovery, and it helps that I don't have that taking my focus away, because I have to worry about getting drunk. I can put my focus on my daughter and my family, you know, and it's a really neat deal. You know, I got some of the best friends I've had in my life right here. You know, I could call them up anytime. You know, we might not even talk about AA. You know, I called Tommy, we could talk for hours just about sports alone, you know. And I have several friends that way. You know, the people I work with, you know, most of them are in AA. You know, I have meetings all day long. You know, it's a really good deal. You know, if you're new to this program, you know, get a sponsor. Go to 1,000 meetings in a year if you can. You know, when I first got here, I went to meetings, 3 meetings in a day. You know, if I was in a meeting, I wasn't going to get drunk. So I stayed around with, I hung around with people in AA that were doing the deal. You know, the people I hung out with were working the steps. They were practicing the principles in their life for the most part. You know, some, we have our moments, you know. And, you know, it's just been a really, really, really great experience. You know, I couldn't have told you 12 years ago that I'd be sitting up here speaking at a Richie Barnett's auditorium. You were nuts, you know. My goal was to just be a functioning alcoholic and, you know, like half the people in my family. You know, they worked and everything, but they were drunk, man, all the time. You know, and, you know, if you're new to this program, you know, give yourself 1 year. They told me when I got here, give yourself 1 year, work the steps, try helping some other people, and if you still want to drink, go do it. You know, they told me that. You know, and one more thing, and then I'll be quiet. You know, I have a friend of mine in the Bay Area that he's lost 3 of his children in recovery, and he hasn't drank over it. You know, and I see that, and I think, you know, when I'm having a bad day, you know, when the guy cut me off and pissed me off when I'm driving or whatever it is, you know, when if he can stay sober through losing 3 of his children, I don't see no reason good enough to go drink after I discovered that information from him. And you know, it takes a really, really good fellowship to help people go through stuff like that, you know. And you know, when my daughter got sick, man, there was people calling me for, you know, doing everything they could to help me, you know. And and it's just this program that does that, man. It's a great, great deal. So if you're new here, you know, work the steps, go to meetings, help other people, and don't drink, and your life will get better. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. It was a pleasure to hear you as ever. When I lived in Orange County, I was asked to speak for the first time down there at the Odd Fellows meeting, appropriately enough. And the as I was there, a group of friends of mine and were there to support me, and one young woman who was probably almost a newcomer showed up, who turned out to become a pretty good friend. But she was parading around in the back of the room while I was talking with a big sign that said "liar." I'd like to introduce you to our featured speaker tonight, Heather D. from Orange County.
I'm a Heather alcoholic. You know, gotta keep them honest. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be alive. I mean, really alive. And I have Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for that. Oh, God, I loved listening to you, Mr. Like, whew, I wish I could do that. Okay, thank you very much. Sit down. Thank you, Billy, for sharing. And I don't have other people in the program. I'm in my family, and so I enjoy, you know, hearing the differences, and then we're exactly the same. I grew up in the Brady Bunch, and I was Jan, and I was so cute. I was really cute. And in fact, I was a threat to my brothers and sisters. That's how cute I was. And, you know, in my house, we did a lot of chores. We're always doing chores. And we were kind of always on our toes. You know, we had that eggshell carpet. You know, want to make sure we don't get in trouble. I remember I would just grab a broom, you know, out of the blue and pretend I was doing something. And, you know, to be honest, I was grumpy. I don't know if you guys know Charlie Brown, but like Lucy Van Pelt, that was me as a kid. And except for when people came over, that was only with my family. And then when people came over, or I went outside of the house, I'm like, hi, yeah, ding, you know. And but with people who were close to me or knew me, I just was irritable, you know? And I didn't know what that was. And I used to like to play by myself, and I daydreamed a lot, and I was always the hero in all my fantasies. I remember I used to imagine, like, saving America, like Russia would come and like hold us hostage, and I would do a song that would save us all, and everybody would be like, thank you all. And I'd be like, it's all right, I'll be all right, you know. I mean, those are the things I remember as a child. And another thing, my parents, I remember alcohol just being a really bright part of our lives. Like, you know, when people would come over and they'd play cards and everybody get loud and you'd hear hooting and hollering and only the adults could be in the kitchen, you know what I mean? And the kids were like, God, I'm missing out. And I would watch my mom, and she would tell stories and just be so lively, and my pop would just keep filling her wine glass. And I thought, God, that's love, you know, that's what I want. And it just, I associated it with warm feelings and, you know, and rewards. You know, you work hard and you play hard, right? And so then I started to go to school, and I started to get, you know, into life outside of my family, because we kind of were secluded until that point. And there's a story that kind of epitomizes me in school, and it was Sam Snow. And I was in junior high, and I used to be really self-conscious of my body and everything. In fact, I used to sit in front of the mirror for hours and stare at myself. I knew every little thing about myself, and I used to make contracts with myself. Because I remember I saw, like, hair on my big toe, and I thought, that's totally disgusting, and I don't want anyone to ever know that about me. So I will always wear socks, and then when I'm married, I'll hurry and turn off the light and hop into bed. Like, I used to think, you know, I need to hide from the world, and I can't show them who I am because they aren't going to love me. And so anyway, Sam Snow, he's this popular guy, and I'm walking around like it's like, you know, 80 degrees outside. I'm in Southern California, and I'm just have a ski jacket on because, you know, I don't want anyone to see what my body looks like. And I'm carrying all my books, and Sam Snow comes up to me, and I'm in the hallway, and he goes, hey, come here. And I was like, and I went over, and he said, you are so beautiful. And I'm like, oh. and I ran. I ran away, and I ran down the hallway, and oh my God, it was the best moment ever, because I'm like, finally, somebody sees me. And I went home that night, and I was, I had a, you know, hop in my step, and we're sitting at dinner, and I said, guess what happened to me? I said, Sam Snow. Sam Snow told me I was beautiful, and then he asked me out. And then I ran away. And my middle brother, David, he looked at me with, like, horror on his face. And I was like, what? And he goes, me and Sam Snow, we do that to the retarded kids. Yeah, right? Oh, my God, I was so mad. I was so filled with, I was like, what? How could you do that to people? But how could you do that to me? I'm thinking. And I remember that moment, I'm like, okay, I'll show them. And from that moment on, I, like, watched and I paid attention and I did the dance, you know? And I ended up being homecoming queen. I showed them. And then I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, by the time I got here, you guys, I didn't know who I was. I thought I knew who I was. And I thought I knew who you were. And I thought I knew how the world worked. My first drink was in ninth grade. And we all went to this party. And, you know, I was just, God, I felt so insecure. And I didn't know it. And we're all sitting around the jacuzzi, and there was a noise in the bushes. And so everyone freaked out because we weren't supposed to be having the party. And everyone ran away, and I stayed at the jacuzzi. And I started drinking everybody's beer. And when they came back, I had finished everybody's drinks. And they're like, Heather, what'd you do? And it was wonderful. I felt like a goddess. Because I didn't care what they thought. And at the same time, I was the center of attention. And I felt fabulous. And I realized that, you know, this is nice. I'm enjoying this. And I didn't feel insecure. And I felt warm. And it was connection for me. And I can't tell you, I ran out and was like crazy to get that, you know, after that moment. In fact, I just went to normal parties like other kids did, like Kagers and whatever. And I didn't mean to show up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, when I was a little girl, this was not my dream. And I didn't mean to hurt anyone. I didn't mean to hurt myself. I just wanted to belong. I was just doing the rite of passage, what we do, right? And I became kind of the type of person that would wander. Because once I found alcohol, I didn't care. I didn't need, I belonged to myself. You know what I'm saying? And so I would end up at places I didn't know anybody. And I'd be the type who'd hop up on the fire pit. And I'd be like, I'm here! And people were like, who is that? And I'd be like, woo! And then, you know, we're all partying, so everyone's like, woo! And then insta-friends, you know, I love you, man! What's your name? You know, that was me. I was such a lover. I was the first one to run over and just love on you. And that's how I drank, and it was just phenomenal. And I had so many great times. That's the truth. I had wonderful times out there. And, I don't know if you guys ever fantasize about your funeral, but I have, you know, more than once. And I've planned it. And you know, basically I would dream that, you know, everybody be sitting there after, like, slideshows and maybe days of memorializing me. And somebody would come up and they would say, you know, how many of you have ever or still do love and are in love with Heather? And everybody would raise their hand, like men and women, and like wives would be like, what? And husbands, what? You know? And that was it. That was my aim. That when I died, I wanted that. I wanted to be just adored. I didn't want to belong. I wanted to, you know, be it. Like, oh, there she is. Like when I walk into a room, there she is. You know? That's what I wanted. And I went for that. And I felt like I achieved it. Like, I don't really know what other people felt, but I sure felt good about myself, you know what I'm saying? And in fact, that's when I met my Eskimo. And if you don't know what an Eskimo is, well, what I learned it was is somebody who introduces you to something that will change your life, like Alcoholics Anonymous. And his name is Joey. And I was working one of my jobs, and he came in demanding, you know, hey, some service. And I was rolling silverware. I thought, oh, get a load of this guy, right? So I rolled some more silverware and took my time and went over there. And he's like, hey, you know, you got pizza out that day, you know. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that, but I'll go ask. You know, I'm like, would you like a drink? He's like, oh, I would, but I'll end up in that tank there with those sharks because I'm crazy. And I'm like, oh, okay, God, a live wire, right? So I went, and I came back, and I remember he was like, treat me like the help. And then he looked at me for just a second in the eyeballs and looked away and then looked again. And then he was different. You know what I'm saying? It was, must have been lightning on his part, because I was like... And so then I, apparently he told the guy that night, I met the woman I'm going to marry. And he wouldn't leave me alone. And in fact, I used to have one of those pagers, you know what I'm talking about, the like see-through green ones. And I had my next job the next morning, and he kept asking for my number, and I'm like, oh, so, right, I finally gave him my number, but my pager number, I thought I'm safe. And I was starting my work at 4 in the morning the next morning, and he paged me, and I thought, oh my God, creeper alert, right? And so anyway, this guy, he wouldn't leave me alone, so I finally said, yes, I'll go on a date with you. And so he calls me to tell me he's going to be late, and I haven't been on a date forever, and I got to run in my nylons. And I'm like, and he's like, nylons? He's like, just wear jeans. I'm like, ooh, pew. For him, I don't want to wear nylons. Thank you. So he came to pick me up, and I had to walk my roommate's dog. And we're walking, and the dog starts taking a big poop. And he's Sicilian, and he loves to cuss, so he's cussing up a storm, like, look at that, you know, pile of blah, blah, blah. And I'm just laughing. And then the dog's all finished, and I'm like, okay. And I go to leave, and he goes, wait, where's your bag? And I went, oh my God, I forgot it. I forgot my bag. And he's like, you never bring a bag. I know it. You never bring a bag. And I was totally flabbergasted, because how did he know that? That was totally true. I'm like, how could he see through me? And he was such my first attraction to Alcoholics Anonymous, because this guy, like, he was just so persistent, and he just loved me no matter what I did. I couldn't do anything wrong. And he used to say, run, baby, run. And I didn't know what that meant, because see, he was sober and I wasn't. And so anyways, he wouldn't go away, so I married him. And we definitely had some adventures, because he ended up relapsing. In fact, I was a live wire, and he didn't tell his sponsor some of the stuff, you know, because I think his sponsor would say, red flag, get out now. And so anyways, he relapsed, and like just one quick story with that. There's so many, but he used to disappear for like 2 weeks at a time. You know, he had a hobby of hotels and women and cocaine. And we had happened to have a daughter, and she was just a little good goods at the time, my little Hannah Banana. And so I was like a newly hormonal little baby. He disappears, and I was upset, you know. And so a person comes and puts like an eviction notice on the house. Well, that's a bummer, because where's the money with him, with Joey? So my friend comes over and says, hey, I got something for you. You know, this will help you to pack up your stuff quick and get out. So she gives it to me, and I, you know, I sniff it, and I'm like walking around like with things in my hands and I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just talking a mile a minute. She's like, you are worthless. You are not doing anything with this. I thought this would help you. And so at that point, I found some pot and I went outside and she located me. And she located me after I was three-fourths finished with the garage door. And I happened to live in a very nice neighborhood. And on the white garage door in red paint, I wrote, have you seen my husband? And husband was crossed out, and then little kid writing, it said daddy. And I thought that was wonderful. I was just felt so much better about everything after that. And so we definitely had some Jerry Springer moments, and we were something else. And so I ended up getting sober. And he tried, and he couldn't get sober. So I had to move on. And so he met me sober, and I left him sober. And I had my little girl, and I had grown up with two parents and a whole family, you know. I didn't know how to do the single mom deal and sober. So and he was rich and I had had money and I was used to that life, and so getting sober I had to get rid of all of that. And you know, I have to tell you though, like I remember one time I had to go and I had to fill up my tire like every 2 days. It was ridiculous. I kept going to the gas station like bum bum, you know. And I caught myself in this moment after before, like people used to take care of my cars for me and all that. You know what I mean? I was like hanging out in limos, like, you know. Joey gave me everything I ever thought that I wanted. So that I could see that actually that's not where happiness lies. I mean, what? That's such a gift. And then he gave me Hannah? What? Hannah alone. And he was my Eskimo. He's the reason I'm standing here today. And I remember I'm filling up my tire. And I had this moment where I was like, you know what? I don't miss all that stuff I had and all that pampering. And yes, I have to work my butt off right now, but I feel freer than I've ever felt. And it's because I was sober. And so anyway, what happened was, is I didn't get to stick around here yet. And I came in and out for a little bit, and then I did the steps, and then they had... Well, actually, I need to back up because this is where I met Rick. When I came in the first time, I was in church, and Joey had disappeared, and I was looking at the little thing in church, and it said AA meeting, and I thought, oh, and I looked around to see if anyone saw where my eyeballs were, you know, because I know they were watching me, and I'm like, wow, okay. So I remember I called, and nobody called me back, and whatever. So I showed up at the meeting, and I walk in, and I sit down, and Rick comes in with a bunch of food, and he's like eating burgers and like, and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm in the basement of a church, and everybody's talking about real stuff, and this is weird. And I feel, you know, I feel totally out of place. And I remember I started sharing, and I sounded like an old timer, I thought. And Rick was nodding, like he understood. That's all I needed, and I kept coming back. And Rick is my big brother, and he's seen me the whole gamut. I used to call him before I called my sponsor because I felt comfortable calling him. Because I knew I was safe. I'd be like, hey, Joey called you. I call him back. He's like, no. But okay. So, anywho, let's get to just before I got here. Okay. So, my dad, my pop, who I adore, he passed away. And, I had been just enjoying sobriety so much that I started to not go to meetings. And because, you know, I'm okay now, right? And we had a one-year birthday for me, a one-year sobriety birthday for me, and I was on top of the world. I was on fire. And my pop passed away. And I did his funeral like it was a dinner party. I didn't even cry. And then I went to Italy to do his ashes, and I was there for a month, and I didn't go to any meetings. And, you know, I started to feel like I'm like everybody else, you know. And I came back, and we decided to go to a Tom Petty concert. And they said, oh, I'm going to go get some pot. And I said, oh, I'll get that for you. And they're like, wait a second, did you just have a one-year birthday? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm just going to get it, you know, because I got skills. And so I went and I saw this whole group of, you know, men, and I'm like, hey, you guys got some pot? They're like, are you a cop? I said, yeah. They're like, okay, cool. So they gave me this huge bag, all these papers, and I thought, how can I pass up this opportunity? And I'm like, I'm going to join you guys. So I got high, and I thought, you know, if I don't drink, it'll be okay. I used to laugh at people who talked like that in meetings. And here I was. Isn't that amazing? Cunning, baffling, powerful. Oh, my God. And when I woke up that next morning, I realized what I did, you know? I felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. And suddenly nothing made sense. I felt scrambled. And I felt myself shut down. And I was cut off. I was cut off. And so I played Gaelic football. And so I decided, you know, if you're going to go out, you might as well go out. So I went to Chicago for my Gaelic football tournament. And I drank with a slew of Irishmen. And I don't know what they were saying, but boy, we could drink. I was like, belly up to the bar, boys. And then while I was there in Chicago, I had a moment. I had an awakening. I've had many awakenings. And in there, I was singing, and it wasn't a karaoke bar, and all my new friends were cheering me on, and suddenly it was like silent for me. Like they were cheering, but inside myself I was silent. And I looked around, and I had this little girl at home, and I was full of AA. And I was like, wait a second, I've been here and I've done that, and I couldn't stay stopped. That's what got me. Not that I could stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. Well, wait a second. Whoa. Maybe I do belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I had a reservation before, and I felt a little different than you. And I didn't know that until I relapsed. I didn't know. I mean, I came in and thought, you guys were so lucky I'm here. You know? I have so much to give and add to your lives. You know, and I didn't see it. So I came home, and I started confessing to my current sponsor, and we got a phone call, and my friend in sobriety, who had 6 years, she shot herself in the heart on the day that I got sober. And I checked my phone, and she had called me while I was in Chicago. But I was drinking, so I put her to my voicemail. So you know what? I had already decided I'm going for this. I don't care. I'm going for this. Because how do I know? How do I know if I'm crazy? Because I'm my only reference point. You know, I would have to take myself out of me and put myself in somebody who has some sanity so that I could go right back and go, ho, okay. What do you need me to do? Because I didn't know I was crazy. People would say, oh, my mind is so busy. I go, oh, I'm sorry for you. But I didn't know my mind was busy too, because I only have my mind. You know what I'm saying? I only have my brain. And this disease centers in our mind. And it says in the book that our minds are fettered. They're imprisoned with fixed ideas, traditions, superstitions, fear. But I don't know it. I think that what I'm believing and seeing is true. And it's not. It's a bunch of gobbledygook. I needed my brain washed and I didn't know it. So anyway, I came back and that's when I met Carol, Rick's wife. And I knew that I was missing the spiritual piece because I went out. And so she said, let's go to an 11-step meeting. I said, okay. And that's where I met my new sponsor. And I remember she stood up and she said God a few times. And she was like this big love bug. And I go, that's what I want. That's what I want. I was in the back of the room with a big smile on my face. And I was dying inside. And I was raising my hand like, okay, I'm here. I'm not here to put on a show. I'm here to just do this. Anna and Joey was still hanging on. He was still hanging around. And I said to Carol, I don't know what to do, because I had this belief that I got to stay with him because I'm married. But there was so much chaos and so much pain. And so she goes, why don't we go over and talk to his old counselor? I'm like, I don't even know where to find him. She goes, let's just go that way. So we went over, and guess who's standing right there, right in the front? I'm like, oh my God. And I walked up to him, and I said, do you remember? He goes, Heather, and he gave me a big hug. And I said, Joey, he said, what are you doing? And Spirit spoke to me and said, it's time. Just let it go, honey. So from then on, it took off. And I got to go and I got to do... how am I doing on time, by the way? Okay. So I started doing some fun stuff. I started experimenting, because that's where I learned from Ralphie about contrary action. I met Ralphie at the 11-step meeting. And, what I found with contrary action, just do what you don't want to do because you don't want to do it, just for shits and giggles, just to see what might happen. And God will be behind that. You will find God that way, by doing things differently. So I did. And I have to tell you guys, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was studying to be a minister. And I really was. I know it seems like, what? I was studying to be a minister, and I grew up in church, and God was my favorite thing. And so when I was studying to be a minister, I learned about other religions, and I thought, wait a second, why is my religion right? And I started to go through all this doubt, and when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought, I had the God thing. I had it. I know who God is, right? And then I went and I listened to this priest share. And this priest talked about how he had to borrow a nun's concept of God. And I was like, oh my God, the lightning's going to come through the roof right now. What are you saying? And because he was an authority in my eyes, I heard him. I'm like, wait a second, so maybe I'm just mistaken? Maybe I'm just mistaken about some things or all things. I don't even know about the God I have, and I'm blocked and I don't know it. Oh my God, I've never been so happy to be mistaken. And then that opened up everything. I'm like, what if I'm mistaken about everything? What if everything I hold is maybe just not the deal? How would I know if I don't set it aside and open myself up to see what might show up? You know what I'm saying? Not here, but come through here first and then back up. I had no idea I was walking around asleep, unconscious. And I found I could wake up in Alcoholics Anonymous. What? I thought I was a loser coming here. I don't want to tell anybody I'm an alcoholic. That's not the case anymore. This has become the greatest surprise of my life, getting sober. So I know some of you want to hear about Marv. So the whole contrary action thing, it got me into, then I'm just going to create a new God. I'm going to turn into somebody that I used to make fun of. I'm going to commit blasphemy. And so what I did is because I feel like God, Jesus, whoever, was like sitting there going, no, Heather, honey, you're just mistaken about that. I wish you could see it. How can you see it? So what I did is I went to the other extreme and I created Marv. And Marv, he has a huge fro. It's a he-she. And he would like hang out with me like unconditional love to the point where I'd be like wanting to vomit. Like if I was not in a good spot, I'd be like, can you just give me some space? And Marv would be like, no, I'm just going to wait it out with you. And he would smile at me and I had a big cold gold tooth. And every time he'd smile, he'd go, ding, and it would sparkle. And I don't know, he came out of my imagination, guys, and she came out of my imagination. Best thing ever. Because it challenged me. It challenged some deep stuff within me. And I really got into that. I really got into, well, you know what? When a belief would come to me, I'd go, well, why is that true? And who said? And I would challenge it. And it became the funnest thing ever, and I still do it. And it's so much fun because it opens me up to a whole new world. Because if I'm mistaken about stuff and I set it aside, then maybe truth will show up. And I had no idea that I would find who I was here in Alcoholics Anonymous, who I really was, and that I could be comfortable in my skin. That's amazing. What a gift that is. So, I still dress up like Marv every Halloween. You know, it's an honor thing. But since then, I have, you know, things have expanded for me in so many ways. The more spiritual I feel I get, actually the more human I get. And I settle more into my humanity. And I absolutely love everybody more, as well as myself. Like, it's very simultaneous. And how much time do I have now? Okay. And I met Jimmy. He's my spiritual advisor. I met him at the 11th step meeting. Thank you, Carol. That was like gold. And he came in, he rolled in his wheelchair, and he shared, and he was like, oh, and I thought, oh, who is that? And I went up to him, and I'm like, thank you so much for sharing. He goes, it's time you come to my house now. And I was like, what? He said, yeah, I had a dream about you, and you need to come work with me. And I thought, oh, yeah, right. You know, I've heard that before. And we became fast friends, and I went to his house, and I couldn't get enough of what he said to me. Like, I would get tired. I would start yawning, and he said that was always a good sign, you know, because that means I was getting fed. And so I went through the steps with my sponsor, Diana, and I went through the steps with Jimmy. And Jimmy took me through a different way so that I would have a different vantage point. And he had me go and he had me mark all the things that, all the experiences, all the emotions, all the situations, all the thoughts, all the behaviors that an alcoholic experiences while not, like, either not under the influence and also not under the influence of God, like in the middle, what maybe some people would call dry. And so I had to go through and find those things. And he said, you know, the first example was when Bill sailed for over there, he experienced loneliness. He was lonely. And that was when he didn't have booze in him and he didn't have God in him yet. So that was one, lonely. And I went through and I did all these, like, there was, you know, anxiety, irritation, you know, all those things that create separateness. And I realized, I didn't know that's what I was underlining, but it was. And what I come to find out is all those things are spiritual maladies. And that's the crux of alcoholism for me. Alcoholism for me is a threefold disease. It separates me from myself. It separates me from you. And separates me from any purpose or spirit or higher thing, higher calling. And that separation is an illusion. But I have bought into it, and I believe it to be true. And I can't tell the false from the true. And so he helped me get to the bottom of it. And God, it's so wonderful. You know what I mean? To know that it's not true. Hey, guys, it's not true. You know? We're all connected. We're all, like, it's all perfect right now in this moment. And that's what he told me. I mean, what a wonderful message, right? And it's not just a message like, you know, I hope you feel better in a Hallmark card. It's like for real. And that's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, a vehicle to access to a power that I cannot wrap my head around or contain or put my finger on, but I can flow with it. And I can actually just be in the moment. And I can be comfortable. And I can feel connected without having to do anything outside of myself to change the way I feel inside. It comes from the inside out. And what a gift that is. And you know, I have to say that 5 days ago, my Eskimo, my daughter's father, he passed away. And he had a heart attack because his body gave out. Because, you know, he was doing what we do for a long time, living on the edge. And what a beautiful man, you know? What a beautiful man. He just had his demons, you know? He just had what we have. He was the true Jekyll and Hyde. But my gosh, when he was on, just that heart, just so pure. And that never changed about him. It's just he was shut off from it. And my daughter and I loved him all the way up to the end, like, and took him just as he came. Because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's, we get to do that. We get to love each other no matter what. We show up no matter what. And so my daughter's 14 now, and she's so sad, and but she's amazing. She's such an old soul. We got to talk to him just a couple weeks ago, and he was crying to her on the phone, and he's like, I've been a horrible father to you, and I haven't been there for you. And she said, Daddy, stop. She goes, you're the best daddy in the whole world. And he was quiet. He was caught off guard. He's like, no, I'm not. And he started going again, and she said, Daddy, listen, I wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for you. And I'm overhearing this on the phone. And then he started complaining about her sister from a different marriage. Like, she never calls me back. And she's like, Daddy, have people been patient with you? He's like, yes. She's like, well, maybe you could be patient with Mari. And you guys, that's the result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to raise a little girl, and I got to make up all of our traditions because why not? Like, on a Tuesday, I'd be like, Merry Christmas! And when she was like 5 years old, she wanted to be 92 years old for her birthday. So I had 92 candles on the cake. And you know what? She would jump on the bed, and my initial reaction would be like, no. And I'd think, well, why not? Why is that true? Why can't she jump on? Go ahead, honey, jump on the bed. And you guys taught me that. You guys taught me that I can do anything in this program. I can be transformed from the inside out. And anyone who's in my life gets the gift of that as well. And I get to be here with a life much bigger than just me. And I get to be of service, and it's the best thing ever. When I go on vacation, I'm of service. Like, and it's not a chore when I say that. It sounds like a chore for some reason. Everywhere I go, like, I get to be just of service, and it's the best thing ever. You guys getting to be here? Are you kidding me? I have his services on Monday and Tuesday, and there's no way I was missing being here. Because I get to show up for him, because, you know, he's a part of who I am standing here. I get to show up and say thank you. I get to say thank you. I get to say thank you. Thank you for my life. Thank you for what I get to look forward to. I mean, God, I look back at Heather back there and I think, oh my God, thank you for hanging on, honey. Because I had no idea I'd feel like I do at this moment. So here I am in this moment thinking, oh, you know, I feel so whatever. But who knows what's going to be happening over there. I'm going to be looking back thinking this one again. Because I look back and I think, oh, you're so cute, you thought you knew. And so then I'll be over there looking back at me who thinks I know. You know what I'm saying? I love not knowing. And at the same time, I love knowing. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to be anywhere else but Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the most beautiful thing in my life. And I'm honored to be here today. And thank you for giving me your attention. Thank you for asking me to speak. Thank you for all the gifts. I felt like a celebrity for sure. And that's my favorite thing. And I can honestly say I just have love right now flowing through me for you guys, and it's bigger than me. It's not just Heather. And I love that my life is that big. So if you're here, stick around. And if you don't know what's up, yes, that's awesome. Just hang on, because there's so much to look forward to. Thank you. Oh, wait, hold on. One more thing. My friend always says this at the end, and it's my favorite, okay? So I want to honor him. He's so cool. His name's Jeff. And he talks about, you guys know the story about Jesus from Palm Sunday? And how he, like, rides into town on a donkey, and everybody's so excited with their palms, and they're, like, crying, and they're so excited to see him, and it's just reverence and this epic moment, and Jesus riding in on the donkey. Now, what if as they ride into town, the donkey thinks it was all for him? So I need to remember, I am just the jackass carrying the message.